Animals Today Radio is made possible in part by a generous grant from International Society for Animal Rights, ISARonline.org. Today, your home for serious talk about animals. I'm Dr. Lori Kirshner. Today, we're going to be talking about one of my favorite birds, the roadrunner. Here's my interview from 2009 with naturalist Jim Cornette. You know, I have to tell you, about 4 or 5 weeks ago, I was driving home from work and I stopped my car to watch a roadrunner on the side of the road. I'd seen this very guy pretty much in the same place as several times before. Anyway, I must have sat just in my car for about 15 minutes just watching this beautiful bird, and he just seemed to be hanging out and looking around and occasionally would scurry about. Then coincidentally, a few days later, one of my patients was telling me about his two little roadrunners that he had seemed to have adopted, Samson and Sally. They hang out right in his backyard. He tells me he has been feeding them for quite some time now. He purchases live worms off the internet. He feeds them every day. The birds actually go right into his lap and eats right out of his hands. That's when I realized that I know nothing about these most distinctive and beautiful birds who share our Coachella Valley with us. Actually, the one thing I knew about the roadrunner is that it is the official state bird of New Mexico. Did you know that? And I remember the cartoon character, the roadrunner. Remember that? Wile E. Coyote and the roadrunner from a series of Looney Tunes and Merry Melodies cartoons. The characters were created by animation director Chuck Jones. That was in 1948 for Warner Brothers. The roadrunner was depicted as this extremely speedy bird, which we know they can run quite fast. We've seen that. That ran on the roads in the U.S. southwestern desert, which I believe is the natural environment for both the roadrunners and coyotes. And in these cartoon series, the roadrunner never harms the coyote, but the coyote seems to always be harmed by his own doings or failure of his own scientific methods and inventions that he would use to pursue this elusive fast bird. The roadrunner had no dialogue in the cartoon ever, except beep beep. Do roadrunners make beep beep sound? We're going to have to ask our guest. I don't remember the coyote speaking in these series, but the coyote would speak in the series with Bugs Bunny. Remember those series? He had like a British accent, and the coyote was a little snooty character and would always introduce himself as Wile E. Coyote, super genius. But you know, actually, the coyote does speak in one episode of the series with the roadrunner. I bet you don't remember which that one was. It was the one series where there was two little children watching the cartoon roadrunner, and one of the kids says something like, "Sometimes I feel very sorry for the roadrunner. Sometimes I wish he would catch that bird." And the other child says, "Well, if he caught him, there would be no more roadrunner." And then the first kid says, "Well, I don't understand is why the coyote wants to eat the roadrunner in the first place." And then Wile E. Coyote stops, he turns to the audience, explains to the audience why it is he does what he does. So that's the only episode that the coyote speaks. So now, in the cartoon, we never saw the coyote actually catch the roadrunner, right? The roadrunner always seems to be faster than Wile E. Coyote, which is typically not the case in real life. I read that roadrunners can run about 17 miles an hour, and coyotes run about 43 miles per hour. And did we ever see the roadrunner fly? He was always on the ground. We do always see these birds on the ground, don't we? I guess that's why they're called road runners, because they run on the road. They have wings, so they must be capable of flight, but for how long or how far? A lot of questions to ask our next guest, Jim Cornette, author and expert on road runners. I'm Dr. Lori Kirshner. You're listening to Animals Today.
If you're on a highway and road runner goes beep, beep, step aside or you might end up in a heap. Roadrunner, roadrunner runs on the road all day. Even the coyote can't make him change his ways. Roadrunner, the coyote's after you. Roadrunner, if
catches you, you're through. Roadrunner, beep beep. The coyote's after you. Roadrunner, beep beep. If he catches you, you're through. That coyote's really a crazy clown.
Thanks, Jeremy. I haven't heard that in a long time. It's been, what, 30 years? You're listening to Animals Today. I'm Dr. Lori Kirshner. Naturalist and author Jim Cornette is with us to talk about this most distinctive, beautiful bird, the roadrunner. Welcome, Jim.
Thank you, Lori.
Thanks for being here. How did you get interested in roadrunners?
Well, I guess I started when I was in high school, and I saw a roadrunner attack and kill a rattlesnake.
Wow.
And that pretty much did it for me. I became quite fascinated with them after that.
Because there's not many animals that can do that, huh?
Not many, and the roadrunner is just one of them.
Wow. Now, roadrunners are in the cuckoo family. What other birds are in that family, and can you tell us about their physical characteristics?
Well, members of the cuckoo family are, I don't mean to frighten anyone, but we call them zygodactylus because they have two toes pointing forwards and two toes pointing backwards. And that's one of the principal characteristics of all members of the cuckoo family. Oddly, a lot of the cuckoo family members the female lays her eggs in the nest of other birds. They're nest parasites. But the roadrunner is not one of those. There's a yellow-billed cuckoo and a black-billed cuckoo that live in the United States. And then in Europe, they have one just called the European cuckoo. But all of these have those funny toes, two forward, two backwards, and they usually have a long tail and a fairly long beak as well.
And I've seen the toe configuration of the roadrunner. It is quite funny with the two forward and two back. Is there a reason for that?
Well, it seems to have benefit the roadrunner in terms of its ability to run on the ground, but it's probably more of an evolutionary accident than any specific adaptation. There really hasn't been, I can't really point to any specific value of those two backward pointing toes other than they help bird keep balance, I guess. But the roadrunner, unlike hawks and falcons, doesn't have the ability to grab anything tightly like the talons of a hawk or falcon.
Right, and they probably don't have the balance either, right?
They handle ground dwelling pretty well. But they don't have powerful feet.
Yeah. Now we know the connection with the cartoon character and the noise beep beep.
Yeah.
What are the true vocalizations, Jim, of a roadrunner?
Well, roadrunners make just about every kind of sound other than a beep beep. In fact, they have more vocalizations than almost any other bird in America. Unfortunately, the beep beep is not one of those.
Yeah, yeah. And where that came from, I don't know.
Well, you know, I guess we associate roads and cars and horns.
That's right.
And the roadrunner is seen as a bird that likes to spend its time on the ground, often seen running across roads. So maybe there's some kind of loose connection there.
Yeah. Where are roadrunners found?
Well, roadrunners are primarily a bird of the southwestern United States. However, in the last five or six decades, they have been expanding their range both to the north and to the east. And so now they're found in Louisiana, Missouri, Arkansas, and 50, 60 years ago, they were not found in those states.
Why do you think that is?
Two reasons. First of all, it seems that the Southwest and Western United States, and in fact, all of the United States in general, is getting a little bit drier than it has been in the past, and that results in a lot of opening up of thickly vegetated areas that result in a lot of open ground that roadrunners like. They like desert environments where there's not too much shrubbery. And so that drying out of much of the United States seems to benefit them. And then secondarily, the fact that humans love to, you know, grade over forests and shrublands, make way for shopping malls and highways and residential areas. And when you open up the environment like that, it actually is conducive to roadrunners.
Can you tell us about their physiological and behavioral adaptations to the desert heat?
Well, as a bird, they have a fairly high normal operating temperature. So unlike us, we run around with a core temperature of about 98.6 or so.
Mm-hmm.
Roadrunners usually have an operating temperature of 102 degrees. So they have about a 5-degree advantage over us. In other words, they don't need to start trying to cool off their body until it gets up into the high 80s. So during the early morning hours and late afternoon and evening hours, we, you know, they don't have to use water to cool off their body as we might. And so they get another hour or two each day when they don't have to use evaporative cooling. I should mention that roadrunners don't really perspire like we do. The best description is it's kind of a panting, but a panting unique to birds.
Mm.
So that's certainly one adaptation. And then behaviorally, you know, they're not dumb. They spend the hot days of midday in the shade where it's a lot cooler than it would be out in the open sun. But the primary strategy is that the roadrunners are carnivorous. They eat other animals, and when they do that, they're getting a whole lot of moisture every time they eat a rattlesnake or a lizard or a bug, because most of those things are mostly water. And so as long as they find enough food, they usually get all the water they need, and then by staying in the shade, it works out quite well for them.
And do they – I read something about some unique way they conserve water through their urine or
You know, birds excrete uric acid in their waste products, and mm-hmm. it takes a lot less water to get rid of waste products for a roadrunner, and for that matter, any kind of bird, than it does a mammal.
Right.
And so mammals have to have a lot of water to get rid of their waste products, and the roadrunners are kind of almost pre-adapted to the desert lifestyle.
Take these broken wings and learn to fly. All your life, you were only waiting for this moment to arise. Blackbird singing in the dead of night.
Every day in the United States, tens of thousands of puppies and kittens are born. Unfortunately, there aren't enough homes for all these cats and dogs. One unfixed female cat and her offspring can be the source of more than 400,000 cats in 7 years. One female dog and her unfixed offspring can produce about 67,000 puppies. Too many cats and dogs are unwanted anywhere by anybody, so they end up being neglected or abandoned. Millions of healthy pets are killed in shelters annually in the U.S. On average, 70% of the animals that enter the shelter end up getting euthanized. Fortunately, there is good news. There's a new answer to this dilemma. We can help to stop killing these animals by having our pets spayed or neutered. If you want a new pet, how about adopting one? You can rescue a cat or dog and save a life.
This message is sponsored by Advancing the Interests of Animals. You can check them out at aianimals.org. That's the letter A, I, animals.org.
Do you got any ideas?
I have a great idea.
Pitch it to me.
Pitch it to me.
Hey, I got an idea.
Well, let's hear it.
Successful businesses start with great ideas and cool inventions. Hi, everybody. I'm John Cremins, the doctor of Shopology. Join me and ACOS, the solutionist, on My Cool Inventions every week. We continue our ongoing search for America's top invention. You can be the next one. Together, both ACOS and myself provide over 60 years of experience in the industry of inventing products and presenting them on shopping channels worldwide. Every show, we give our advice on how to successfully produce your product. Along with great information and featured industry guests, you'll also get a chance to listen to the inventors of some of the coolest inventions and vote on which projects you like. You be the shark. Now, if you have a $1 million idea in your head, submit it to us, and you can be selected to be on our show for your chance to be voted America's top invention. It's true reality radio, where you decide and regular American families like yours are lifted one innovation, one inventor, one American at a time.
ACOS the Solutionist here. Imagine a device that constantly scans your house. It lets you know if there's an intruder getting in or out of your house, condo, or apartment. This spy versus spy technology is here. The activator simply plugs into any wall outlet of your home. You plug in a light, TV, or radio. When anyone's trying to enter your home, bang, the lights turn on, the stereo turns on, whatever you plug into the activator turns on. Imagine the intruder being welcomed with light and sound. They're out of there. Not only that, when you come home in the dark, the lights turn on for you. The house welcomes you, hugs you. It's like not living home alone anymore. Normally, one activator costs $60, but this exclusive radio offer cuts the price in half and doubles it. That's two activators, $120 value for only $29.99. call 1-888-877-0490. That is 1-888-877-0490, or go to mycoolgadgets.com. That's mycoolgadgets.com.
You're listening to America's Talk Radio Network, where America talks.
Welcome back to the show. We're going to continue our discussion with Jim Cornette about the Roadrunner.
Jim, you mentioned that they're primarily, Roadrunners are primarily carnivores, and they eat lizards and scorpions, and so they rarely eat vegetables?
Only in the wintertime when they're hard-pressed for food, because you know, most of the lizards are in hibernation and it's hard to find snakes in the winter. Only in the wintertime will they eat some seeds and fruits. But they don't really like to do that. That's kind of an emergency ration.
I see. And do they feed on other birds?
Yeah, I don't like to talk about that
okay.
a lot because...
Okay, then don't.
Well, but basically roadrunners will eat any animal they can subdue and swallow whole.
Okay. Yeah, I was hoping you were going to say, no, of course they don't feed on other birds. Okay. And you mentioned at the opening about... that you originally got interested in roadrunners because you saw one catch and eat a snake. Tell us about the way they go about that. Do they have a method whereby they catch this rattlesnake, which I know there's not many animals out there that can catch a rattlesnake and eat it whole?
Well, roadrunners, whenever they approach a snake, you know, looking at it as a possible meal, they act as though it's venomous. They kind of treat all snakes as venomous snakes.
Mm-hmm.
And so in that respect, rattlesnakes are treated like even a harmless snake. And this seems to be inborn because we have taken roadrunners, hatched the eggs, they've never seen a snake, and then when they're about a year old, we put them in front of a snake and they immediately go after
wow.
the snake, kill it, and swallow it. Now, the only limitation is the size. A roadrunner can eat a rattlesnake up to about 16 to 18 inches long. We're talking about young rattlesnakes, and what they do is they try to grab the rattlesnake by the head, right behind the head at the neck, and once they have the head under control so they don't have to worry about being envenomated or bitten by the rattlesnake, they just start slapping it against the ground like a whip until they break its backbone in so many places that the rattlesnake is completely paralyzed.
Wow. That's so interesting.
Yeah, it's we x-rayed a rattlesnake that we had seen killed by a roadrunner, and its backbone was broken in 16 places.
Oh, my goodness. You know, last week our topic of animals today was spiders, snakes, and scorpions.
Uh-huh.
And we spoke about that this is, you know, spiders and snakes are pretty much the most feared and disliked creature around by humans.
Yes, I would agree.
Yeah, and... you know, there's so many studies, I mentioned this last week, going on about talking about just the controversy of whether people are fearful of them or dislike them. Is that a innate, you know, genetic thing, or is it a learned behavior to be fearful of snakes and spiders? But you're saying in roadrunners, it's ingrained in their genetic makeup that they know that they're all venomous and to how to catch them, huh?
Yes, because without ever having, the roadrunners we hatched in captivity never saw another roadrunner. They only saw us.
Wow.
And they still were just as effective at attacking a venomous snake as was a wild roadrunner.
That's amazing.
So it's imprinted in their behavior.
Yeah. Almost. What are the predators that eat the roadrunner?
Well, I hate to say this, but the coyote is a very rare predator.
Oh, is it really? So
yeah,
the cartoon didn't depict that correctly either, huh?
Yeah, the cartoon is fun, and it certainly has done much to enhance our fondness of roadrunners, but there's a lot of errors in the cartoon, and one of them is that the coyote somehow preys extensively on roadrunners. I have never... talk to any other professional naturalist, nor have I ever seen myself a roadrunner being eaten by a coyote, even a dead roadrunner, you know, that was hit by a car or something and a coyote scavenging it. I've never seen that myself, nor have I ever talked to anybody who's seen a coyote prey on a roadrunner. So I'm not saying it can't happen. I'm sure that it happens once in a while, but it's a very rare event. Coyotes are much more likely to go after just about any other kind of animal.
Right.
I had heard about, your comparison of coyotes and roadrunners' running ability, and the coyote can certainly run faster
right.
than the roadrunner.
Yeah.
The difference is that the roadrunner can turn on a dime.
Mm.
It can make much more rapid, quick changes in direction than the coyote can because it's not as heavy. And then if the coyote were closing in on the roadrunner can fly.
Okay, so I was going to ask you that because we do always see roadrunners on the ground. I don't think I've ever seen a roadrunner fly. So if they have to, they will fly to escape from a predator. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, they can do that. They can fly for about 50 yards, up to 8 feet off the ground. And after that, they have very small pectoral muscles, and so they can't really sustain flight much beyond 50 yards. And the other, and then after that, they pretty much glide.
Yeah.
And so in a pinch, they'll do it, but they definitely don't like to fly.
And if a car's coming, can they fly to get out of the way?
Yes. They'll both run and fly to escape oncoming cars.
Oh, that's a
but
good thing.
Sometimes they don't make it. Particularly young roadrunners that just don't understand what a car is all about.
Oh.
They may linger on the pavement too long and not be able to escape.
Yeah. Do roadrunners migrate?
No. Roadrunners, wherever you see them, we consider them residents. That is to say, when you see a roadrunner, particularly in the middle summer, fall, winter, and early spring, the roadrunners you see are actually living pretty close to your house. They will spend their whole time within a half mile of your home if you see one around your home, and then they'll nest there as well. The only exception is sometimes in late spring and early summer, young roadrunners will disperse from their parents' territory and look for a new territory of their own, and at that time, they are moving around a little bit.
We're going to continue to learn about these beautiful creatures, the roadrunner. So stay with us. I'm Dr. Lori Kirshner. This is Animals Today. Jim, you mentioned some of the habits of the roadrunner, and specifically you described the method in which the roadrunner kills and eats a rattlesnake, which was very interesting. How do they go about eating other poisonous insects or creatures, like, let's say, a scorpion?
Well, roadrunners love scorpions, which might be nice to know if you're living in an area where there are scorpions around your home.
Right.
And when they get a scorpion, they always grab it by the tail. And then, just as they do in the case with rattlesnakes, they start banging it against the ground while they're holding it in their beak until it's dead and lifeless.
Wow.
And then they just swallow it down, stinger and all.
Wow. And you mentioned, when I asked you about the predators that eat the roadrunner, we learned that it's rare for a coyote to be a roadrunner predator.
Yeah.
What are some of the predators of the roadrunner?
Well, adult roadrunners have two primary predators. The one is a Cooper's hawk. Cooper's hawks are well known to attack and kill adult roadrunners. They have, pretty lethal talons and a lethal beak, and the roadrunner doesn't really have any weapon like that to defend itself with. So roadrunners are pretty easy targets, particularly young and mature roadrunners for Cooper's hawk. And then the other animal that has been known to prey on roadrunners is the prairie falcon. And they, too, like the Cooper's hawk, have powerful talons and a very sharp, powerful beak. And so they've been known to prey on them as well. Those would be the two principal enemies. And in the Coachella Valley area, the Cooper's hawk would be the primary predator of roadrunners. In fact, I've even seen a Cooper's hawk actually fly down and grab a young roadrunner that was sitting on top of a fence.
Wow.
And, he was young and immature.
Oh.
Where the adults are pretty aware and able to avoid Cooper hawk attacks, young roadrunners do fall victim to them.
Now, Cooper's hawks also have been known to swoop down and get cats. Is that correct?
Well,
domestic cats?
It would have to be a pretty small cat.
Mm.
Certainly a kitten would be vulnerable to a Cooper's sock, but an adult cat would be safe even from the largest female Cooper's sock.
Here's the problem. If you have a vacuum cleaner that sucks up dirt and dust and does nothing else, how about a vacuum cleaner that has a UV bulb in it that kills dust mites and bacteria and viruses and all those creepy crawly things that are running around? Maybe it's on your bed, maybe it's on your sofa, on your pillows, on your carpets. Well, introducing the UV Healthy Living Vac. This is a vacuum cleaner that has a stem to stern UV bulb in it, the power to kill bacteria and viruses right there. So use it like a regular vacuum cleaner, except now you know you're killing bacteria, dust mites, viruses, bacteria, anything that's gone on the floor there, those things are being killed. A UV vac is the next generation of vacuum cleaners. Now, if you've got a bed, you know that if you've got a bed that's older than 8 years old, the chances are that bed could weigh twice what it did when it was brand new. What's all the weight? Well, you don't want to know. Stuff like dust mite feces and things like that, because we don't have an appliance in the house to clean up your mattresses and pillows and sofas. The UV Healthy Living Vac is a fantastic appliance for just that reason. Go on there, get rid of the dust mites, the bed bugs with the UV Healthy Living Vac. How much do they cost? This vacuum cleaner normally costs $299. But for the first 30 people on the deal of the week, you can get it for $59.99. You heard me right, $59.99, brand new in a box. Call 1-888-877-0490. That's 1-888-877-0490. Or check it out at mycoolgadgets.com. That's mycoolgadgets.com. Imagine the power of vacuum cleaner with a HEPA filter in it. You can use it on the floors. You can pick it up, use it on a bed, use it on a sofa, but it's got the killing power of UV lamp built right in. That UV lamp will kill bacteria, dust mites, bed bugs, all those nasty, creepy, crawly things. $59.99 for the first 30 people. Call 1-888-877-0490 or go to mycoolgadgets.com. ACoS the Solutionist here. Imagine a device that constantly scans your house. It lets you know if there's an intruder getting in or out of your house, condo, or apartment. This spy versus spy technology is here. The activator simply plugs into any wall outlet of your home. You plug in a light, TV, or radio. When anyone's trying to enter your home, bang, the lights turn on, the stereo turns on, whatever you plug into the activator turns on. Imagine the intruder being welcomed with light and sound. They're out of there. Not only that, when you come home in the dark, the lights turn on for you. The house welcomes you, hugs you. It's like not living home alone anymore. Normally, one activator costs $60, but this exclusive radio offer cuts the price in half and doubles it. That's two activators, $120 value for only $29.99. Call 1-888-877-0490. That is 1-888-877-0490 or go to mycoolgadgets.com. That's mycoolgadgets.com. Here's the problem. Nail polish, hair dye, graffiti, tar. How do you get those stains out? Use Stains Are Out. Any stain, anywhere. Nail polish, oil, lipstick, pet stains, old stains, any stains, this will get your stain out. In fact, if it doesn't get your stain out, we'll buy the bottle back from you. Made with natural banana oil, oil from the skin of a banana, biodegradable and organic, Stains Are Out is the solution. Pour it on and get your stain out. Normally, a bottle of Stains Are Out sells for $29.99. Hyper-concentrated, each bottle will make 16 bottles of stain remover. $29.99 for 16 bottles of dilution. And here's the deal. If you buy a bottle of Stains Are Out right now, we'll give you three bottles. That's 48 bottles worth. That's the deal. Buy one, get three bottles for $29.99. Call 1-888-877-0490 or go to mycoolgadgets.com.
You're listening to America's Talk Radio Network, where America talks.
Welcome back to the show. More about the Roadrunner with Jim Cornette.
What is the lifespan of a Roadrunner?
Well, no one knows that for sure, except that the Coachella Valley Wild Bird Center had a Roadrunner in their one of their enclosures. It was a Roadrunner with a bad leg, and it couldn't fly, and so it would have died had it been released out in the wild. And so Linda York kept that Roadrunner, I believe, for 12 years. And
wow.
That would be the record.
Yeah, wow.
And in the wild, probably not more than 7 or 8 years.
Linda York is wonderful.
Yes, she does wonderful work over there.
My husband and I just brought her a dove that happened to flew into our window and broke a wing.
Oh, yeah. She releases large numbers of all kinds of birds back into the wild after they recuperate at her facility.
Yeah. For those who don't know Linda York, she is the, I guess, the founder and the primary person at the Coachella Valley Wild,
Coachella Valley Wild Bird Center.
That's correct. Thank you for the correct name there. So, Jim, tell us, you mentioned briefly earlier, but if you could go into more detail about the Roadrunner's breeding habits and reproduction pattern.
Well, Roadrunner's breeding habits are not unlike humans in the following ways.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, female roadrunners will not mate with a male roadrunner unless he brings a very nice gift. And she will only mate, but on the other hand, he will only mate with her and only give her the gift after actual mating takes place.
Ah, what's the gift? A rattlesnake?
Well, it's interesting because the gift can't be, you know, nesting material. It can't be an insect. It has to be a vertebrate animal, like a lizard, a snake, a small rodent. He has to prove to her that he has the strength and agility to capture the kind of food that baby roadrunners will require in order to develop normally. And an insect won't do. It has to be a lizard or a snake. And she will simply not respond to his advances unless he brings her the right diamond. I'm sorry.
These female roadrunners sound smarter than us.
They're pretty sharp. The only time they get a little careless as the breeding season goes on, and I should mention that roadrunners, once they pair up, they pair for life. The mates stay with each other until one of them dies.
Wow.
And it is interesting to note, though, even among mated pairs, as they get into the breeding, late into the breeding season, and when they're contemplating raising a second brood, sometimes the male will bring the female a gift, mating will take place, and then he'll run off without giving her the gift.
Oh, that's not fair.
No, it's not right, and she gets very upset, and she'll chase him around 100 yards trying to get the gift. But in the beginning of the breeding season, in early spring, usually in February and March, he always gives her the gift.
That's very enlightening. I really like hearing about their breeding habits there.
It's quite interesting.
Yeah, and you've obviously witnessed all this, huh?
More times than I should have.
Mm. You know, Jim, I've always seen mature roadrunners. I've never seen baby ones. Do they just hide the babies well, or am I not that observant when it comes to roadrunners?
No, because that for many, many years, that was my experience as well. I always wondered why I never saw, you know, relatively young roadrunners. The reason is that most of the time when the roadrunner young usually leave the nest around 20 or so days, but they're only about two-thirds the size of the adult, and they look kind of cute with a relatively short bill and you know, their feathers aren't fully developed. But they're very vulnerable to Cooper's hawks and prairie falcons at that time. And so they hide in dense shrubbery until they reach the full adult size. And so that's why you don't see them. They've left the nest, but they're hiding in the shrubs and they won't come out.
Jim, can roadrunners be domesticated?
They can't be domesticated, but they can be tamed. Domesticated animals are, of course, animals that readily breed in captivity and respond to their owners and whatnot. Roadrunners can be tamed, and I've raised many young roadrunners because people bring me roadrunner eggs that have, you know, fallen out of a nest. They were trimming the shrubbery and the nest was destroyed, but the eggs remained intact. They bring me eggs and we raise the roadrunners. They imprint on people for a while, but at the age of about 4.5 months, they take off.
Mm.
You know, they forget about all the hard work I put in rearing them, and then as soon as they're outside at around 4.5 months, they take off. they might return to our home for a visit every other day for a week, and then we never see them again.
A friend of mine was feeding a couple roadrunners by her house. She was feeding them hamburger meat. Is that a good idea?
No. Imagine if you and I tried to survive on hamburger.
Yeah.
We wouldn't last very long.
Right.
An adult roadrunner can handle, you know, a little piece of hamburger now and then. The problem is that from about January 15th through June, when they are likely to be raising young, if they take that little ball of hamburger and feed it to the young, and that's its only meal for half a day, it will develop bone deformities almost every time.
Oh.
And so an awful lot of roadrunners never survive because their parent gave them a ball of hamburger instead of a fully balanced meal, and they grow so fast that 6 hours of only hamburger to digest and to find the needed nutrients means that they have grown irregularly for that 6 hours.
Yeah, that's so interesting, because when you mention they're carnivores, you know, you just think that would be okay. That's very interesting.
Yeah, in the wintertime, you know, if you wanted to feed it a little ball of hamburger, that would be okay. But most of the year, you definitely risk that parent feeding it to the young, the parent not knowing that it's a very bad meal with hardly any of the nutrients and minerals that the baby roadrunner needs.
Are there good places to view or photograph these birds?
Yes, there really are. There are two places in the Coachella Valley where you would be hard-pressed not to see a roadrunner. The first is the Living Desert in Palm Desert. If you're a member of the Living Desert, you can get in at 7 a.m., and in the summertime, if you go over to the Living Desert and wander the grounds at 7 a.m., half the times you go there, you'll see a roadrunner, and they're quite tame there. They won't run from you. They'll stay long enough to get a good photograph. And the other place is the Coachella Valley Wild Bird Center, because sometimes Linda and her staff will throw out a mouse or two that hasn't been eaten by one of her red-tailed hawks, and the roadrunners will grab them. And so they regularly and daily come to the Wild Bird Center, the wild roadrunners in the area. One or two of them will show up, see if you can get a free, easy meal.
Are roadrunners threatened or endangered in any way?
No. I'm pleased to say that roadrunners are one example of an animal that's found in our desert southwest that is doing pretty well. And the reason they're doing well is people like them.
Yeah.
They are the tamest bird in America. I can't tell you how many Coachella Valley residents regularly feed roadrunners on their back patio. They feed them the correct thing, which is crickets, mealworms, or a mouse. And the roadrunners will come up, jump on their lap, and they take the mealworm right out between their fingers.
Mm. And they're beautiful, too. They're beautiful to watch. Jim, you've written about them. Tell us about your books.
Well, a couple of years ago, I wrote a book on the roadrunner describing, you know, what I have learned in these 18 years of studying them. And I talk a little bit about our hypothesis that they may, in fact, actually hibernate in the wintertime.
Author Jim Cornette, thank you for being with us on Animals Today. It's very interesting.
My pleasure. Thank you.
What do you think, Peter? You know, the roadrunner, It's a compelling figure in our society, and even in brands and advertising. Remember the Plymouth Roadrunner, that stripped-down muscle car from the late 60s? It had a cartoon Roadrunner decal on the body.
That's right. People paying good money for a car with a decal on it.
That's right. And now there's two unrelated large ad campaigns featuring the same cartoon Roadrunner, one for Time Warner Cable, I believe, and one's for the auto shopping website, beepbeep.com.
Right, with that song that you can't get out of your head.
Right, it's an annoying song. Interesting, though, that each of these companies doesn't feel their messages being diluted by the other's ad campaign.
Yeah.
You're listening to Animals Today. Check us out at animalstodayradio.com, where you can listen to all our previously broadcast shows. That's animalstodayradio.com. Animals Today Radio is largely sponsored by the nonprofit animal welfare organization Advancing the Interests of Animals.
AIAnimals.org, AIAnimals.org. If you like this show, you like what you're hearing, please consider supporting Advancing the Interest of Animals by making a donation through their website, AIAnimals.org. And you can like us on Facebook. Hi, this is Dr. Lori Kirshner from Advancing the Interests of Animals. And here are a few more ways you can be kind to animals, beginning with this. Report suspected animal abuse or neglect. If you see an underfed dog or an animal left in a car on a hot day, report it right away. You could be saving a life. Try a vegetarian diet, even just for a week. Decreasing and then stopping consumption of animals is probably the best way to show your appreciation for them and for the environment, too. Don't buy cosmetics or household products that have been tested on animals. That's easy these days. And finally, don't wear clothing made from animals. Begin by saying no to fur and gradually give up animal products like leather and wool. It's easier than you might imagine. This message is sponsored by Advancing the Interests of Animals. Please visit us at AIAnimals.org. That's AIAnimals.org.
Here's the problem. Nail polish, hair dye, graffiti, tar. How do you get those stains out? Use Stains Are Out. Any stain, anywhere. Nail polish, oil, lipstick, pet stains, old stains, any stains. This will get your stain out. In fact, if it doesn't get your stain out, we'll buy the bottle back from you. Made with natural banana oil. Oil from the skin of a banana. Biodegradable and organic. Stains Are Out is the solution. Pour it on and get your stain out. Normally, a bottle of Stains Are Out sells for $29.99. Hyper-concentrated, each bottle will make 16 bottles of stain remover. $29.99 for 16 bottles of dilution. And here's the deal. If you buy a bottle of Stains Are Out right now, we'll give you three bottles. That's 48 bottles worth. That's the deal. Buy one, get three bottles for $29.99. Call 1-888-877-0490 or go to mycoolgadgets.com.
This is Dave Shistokas with some very important information for business owners and nonprofit managers in the U.S. Gulf Coast area. Were you in operation at the time of the BP oil spill in April 2010? There's a very short period until June 8th to file a claim in the BP settlement. There are misunderstandings about the settlement. Organizations located well inland, unrelated to tourism or hospitality, are eligible, and there's no need to show that the oil spill was related to their damages. There's no dollar limits on claims to be paid under the settlement. BP is legally bound to pay all valid claims. Call me, Dave Shistokas, for a free evaluation of your potential claim at 312-451-5550. Any claim not filed by June 8th will be gone forever. There's no cost to find out about your eligibility at 312-451-5550 or visit shistokas.com for more. It's S-H-E-S-T-O-K-A-S.com. It takes time to properly prepare a claim, so quick action is critical.
Do you got any ideas?
I have a great idea.
Pitch it to me. Pitch it to me.
Hey, I got an idea. Well, let's hear it.
Successful businesses start with great ideas and cool inventions. Hi, everybody. I'm John Cremins, the doctor of Shopology. Join me and ACOS the Solutionist on My Cool Inventions every week. We continue our ongoing search for America's top invention. You can be the next one. Together, both ACOS and myself provide over 60 years of experience in the industry of inventing products and presenting them on shopping channels worldwide. Every show, we give our advice on how to successfully produce your product. Along with great information and featured industry guests, you'll also get a chance to listen to the inventors of some of the coolest inventions and vote on which projects you like. You be the shark. Now, if you have a $1 million idea in your head, submit it to us, and you can be selected to be on our show for your chance to be voted America's top invention. It's true reality radio where you decide and regular American families like yours are lifted one innovation, one inventor, one American at a time.
ACOS the Solutionist here. Imagine a device that constantly scans your house. It lets you know if there's an intruder getting in or out of your house, condo, or apartment. This spy versus spy technology is here. The activator simply plugs into any wall outlet of your home. You plug in a light, TV, or radio. When anyone's trying to enter your home, bang, the lights turn on. The stereo turns on. Whatever you plug into the activator turns on. Imagine the intruder being welcomed with light and sound. They're out of there. Not only that, when you come home in the dark, the lights turn on for you. The house welcomes you, hugs you. It's like not living home alone anymore. Normally, one activator costs $60, but this exclusive radio offer cuts the price in half and doubles it. That's two activators, $120 value for only $29.99. Call 1-888-877-0490. That is 1-888-877-0490, or go to mycoolgadgets.com. That's mycoolgadgets.com.
You're listening to America's Talk Radio Network, where America talks.
So I saw this article in Bloomberg Business the other day. You know, nothing shocks me anymore about how badly we humans treat animals and the many ways we devise to kill and abuse them. So the next brilliant idea is described in the article titled, "In South Africa, ranchers are breeding mutant animals to be hunted." And the article goes on to tell how the specially bred golden gnu, or wildebeest, are especially prized by rich hunters. They pay almost $50,000 for a chance to hunt one of the animals that rarely occur in nature. The owner of one hunting ranch east of Johannesburg breeds various animals with unusual features, for which the hunters will pay a premium to go after. Joe Mealy with Committee to Abolish Sport Hunting is with us on the show. Welcome, Joe.
Thanks for having me on, Dr. Laurie. I appreciate the opportunity you give us.
Joe, just a few weeks ago, we recently had you on the show talking about other types of canned hunting operations. Are these kinds of game ranches different in any way?
They're different in that the species being bred and hunted are different. In North America, specifically the United States and Texas, to narrow it down a bit more, you'll have canned hunting ranches that feature bears, elk, deer, other North American wildlife. In South Africa, the canned hunting ranches feature lions, rhinos, wildebeest, animals that are native to that area. So other than the species that are being killed, there's really no difference.
Joe, proponents of canned hunting ranches say that without these businesses, many species would be extinct or near extinction. In fact, the ranch owner mentioned in the article said, quote, "My first priority is to generate an income from the animals on my land, but conservation is a byproduct of what I do." What do you think about this?
Yes, the old, "they're better off with us than in the wild" excuse. You know, we hear these kinds of comments from zoos all the time, that they serve a valuable purpose because their breeding programs ensure that the animals will not fall into extinction. But at what price does that come? And is that really what we want? Do we want wildlife that no longer lives wild and free? You know, if an animal exists only on a hunting ranch or in a zoo, they're functionally extinct in the wild, and the natural world feels the effect of their loss. You know, so keeping rhinos in a cage in a zoo or on a hunting ranch really does nothing to help the animals that they had a symbiotic relationship with in nature. It only helps those whose bank accounts are padded from their being bred and sold at auction to the highest bidder.
Yeah, it seems sort of silly to me that to hear these claims that such businesses contribute to the preservation of wildlife species. Joe, aside from the obvious that the animals are killed for recreation, do the animals bred by these ranches suffer in any way? I mean, literally, they are creating freaks of nature, and certainly the breeders have no real idea what they are doing except to create something novel looking.
Oh, of course. You know, when you breed animals for certain traits, you're also breeding in undesirable characteristics and conditions in them. We see this all the time with dog and cat breeding, how German Shepherds are prone to conditions like hip dysplasia, and many Dalmatians are deaf. Persian cats have dental disorders and polycystic kidney disease. You know, the list goes on. With these hunting ranches, when they breed white lions, they really don't care about their skin diseases and cancers that become more likely.
Yeah.
Impala that are bred to be black and other colors are far more susceptible to heat stroke and other skin conditions from the sun. These breeding facilities really do have nothing to do with conservation, because these, not only are these animals not free, but if they were to be free, if they were to escape, which is inevitable, they'll be easy prey for predators, since these mutations make them desirable. Since the mutations that make them desirable to hunters leave them with no natural camouflage to protect them against predators. it's not natural selection. It's genetic manipulation and exploitation.
Oh, well stated. And what are some of the other problems this industry creates?
There are plenty of other problems. These ranches are just another form of farming and ranching, and the animals are nothing more than livestock. There's no natural predator-prey relationship because any predators capable of impacting the profitability of these businesses are eliminated as soon as they find their way onto the ranch. You can make a case that these operations contribute to famine in the areas where they exist. Their immense success, and you mentioned the obscene amount of money these hunters pay to kill these animals, this kind of encourages farmers who are growing crops for human food to consider converting their land over to hunting ranches. You can make far more money raising mutant animals to kill than growing sweet potatoes and greens. And just like other canned hunting ranches in the United States and other countries, a lot of hunting groups do oppose them. When we're talking about mutant African wildlife, the South American Hunters and Game Association says that breeding mutant animals amounts to unnatural manipulation of wildlife. So these kinds of places appeal, to very few people, only the wealthy few that have the billions of dollars to keep them thriving.
Joe, in your opinion, why do these places appeal to people?
What I believe is a very troubled segment of society that enjoys killing and enjoys inflicting pain and suffering on helpless animals. I really think the psychological community should take a deeper look into what drives these people and really try to address this as what I believe is a mental illness and a sickness. These people need help. They're not normal. You know, when young children are raised, they're instincts are to be compassionate towards animals. Yet, for some reason, these people grow up to be the complete opposite. I mean, who needs to kill a giraffe? Who needs to kill an elephant? Who needs to kill a bear? It's so unnecessary. And to see their faces, their smiling faces as they pose with these dead animals, it's really very like when you read serial killers, how they enjoy killing their prey, who happen to be human. You know, the only difference in the minds of many is that killing animals is legal.
Yeah, there's certainly something to be said about people who get enjoyment and pleasure out of killing a beautiful animal. Joe, how can people get in touch with you and Cash?
Thanks for asking. You can check us out on Facebook. Just put in Committee to Abolish Sport Hunting and our page will come up. And feel free to participate. Tell me that you think I'm right on the mark or tell me that you think I'm off my rocker, whatever you feel. You can also check out our website at www.abolishsporthunting.org and you can get in touch with us that way.
Thanks, Joe. You are right on the mark.
Thanks, Dr. Lori. I love being on your show.
And thank you for listening to Animals Today. This is Dr. Lori Kirshner encouraging you to nurture your love and compassion for the only other beings sharing our planet, the animals.